Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. The first half of 2021 has been an incredible 6 months for us. We've had record revenue, profits, operating cash flow. We've also had probably the most challenging first half in our history because of the unprecedented size of the volume. It has put an awful lot of strain on our organization. We've had to hire 30 new people to meet the demands of our customers. And that has been very difficult to do in the middle of a pandemic. At the same time, we've been having a number of logistics problems and a number of problems purchasing components, all of which have been challenged by the whole pandemic for everybody that's in business today. I am pleased to report, though, that our team has done an incredible job of being able to overcome the logistic problems and the part shortages, and we have not missed one promise to any of our customers throughout this historic first half. So they've worked very hard, they've been challenged, and they have responded. We've also introduced a new product called the SkyStrip in June, and it expands our portfolio to 18 products. We have another new product that will come out at the end of this year, and that's going to get us into another new market segment. It'll make it three different market segments that we're working in. With this tremendous growth, we've had approval to go ahead and plan and start building a 50,000 square foot expansion. And that'll increase our capacity from 100,000 square feet to 150,000 square feet, and will dramatically increase our capabilities for shipping. At the same time, the board has declared a 9-cent interim dividend payable in October of this year. And it's 125% of what we paid at the interim last year. And finally, as I'm sure you've seen, we've raised the guidance from 110,000 to 120,000, EBITDA to 42 million, and cash to 36 million. So it's been a fantastic start to the year, and we're looking forward to the challenges that we have in the second half. And with that, I'll turn it over to John Yuncza to give you some details.
Thanks, Jack. So starting with the financial highlights, as Jack mentioned, it was a very strong first half. Revenues grew over 80% period over period, led by North America, which grew approximately 83% period over period. Particularly healthy U.S. non-residential construction market resulted in the very strong performance. But also the international markets on a combined basis contributed approximately 80% growth period over period, led by Europe and Australia. And that top line growth converted efficiently to increased profits. Our profit metrics basically across the board increased about 200% period over period, and resulting in a very strong EBITDA margin for the first half of 38%. And that increased profit also contributed, as Jack mentioned, to very strong cash flow from operations, which grew nearly 9 million period over period to 16 million for the period, for the first half. And that in turn led to a strong period end cash position of nearly 33 million. And also, as Jack mentioned, with the strong first half performance and the general confidence in the general health of the markets we operate in, the board declared that increased interim dividend 9 cents, with the increase commensurate with the increase in profits for the period. So with regard to sales by territory, as mentioned, North America had particularly strong growth, led in part by strength in demand for warehousing in the U.S., which was in turn driven by the rapid increase in e-commerce transaction volume, which drove the demand for warehousing that we see continuing. There were a lot of warehousing projects, which in particular led to an increase in the boom street category in North America. But also, as you look across North America, we saw strong take rates across all our products, which gives us comfort and confidence in the overall health of the market, as there are a variety of projects, non-residential construction projects, that are underway in North America. With regard to Europe, we had very broad-based contribution. We sold into 14 countries, combination of Eastern and Western Europe. The big contributors were Poland, the UK, Italy, Spain, and Germany. And all of that resulted in approximately a 56% growth period over period to 6.4 million. And we feel very good about the general health of the European market, specifically the non-residential construction market. And also with regard to the opportunity to gain traction and further penetration with the new products that we've launched in recent years. With regard to China, the performance period over period was flat. We recognize there are a number of near-term factors that are impacting our near-term performance. But the big story with China remains that breakthrough performance in that territory will be driven by increased and embracing of the demand for quality flat level floors from domestic building owners and end users. And we've yet to see that take hold. And the traction in that area, the demand for quality, has been slower to take hold than we originally anticipated. With regard to the Middle East and Latin America, we had contribution to growth on a combined basis from those territories. But as we would expect, given the small base of revenues, we often see uneven performance from period to period as a result of the small base. Within the rest of the world, we had good performance in our rest of world region, which encompasses a number of territories, growth over 250% period over period to 4.4 million. The big contributors in that region were Australia and, to a lesser degree, India. The strength in performance in Australia, which grew to 2.7 million in revenues compared to 900,000 in the prior period, was driven by our decision to go direct in Q4 of 2020 and put a direct sales and direct support team in place. That has resulted in gaining traction with existing and also new products in the territory, and we feel very good about the opportunity represented by Australia going forward. And then India contributed just over $1 million in revenues, which was good performance considering the very restrictive conditions from the spread of the COVID virus in the first half of 2021. So jumping to sales by product, as I mentioned, the strength in demand for warehousing in the US directly resulted in very strong performance in the boom screed category. The boom screeds are oriented towards large placements, which are large footprint buildings, such as warehousing. And we're really pleased with the performance we saw in the first half. But also, as I mentioned, we had strength across the board. We had good contributions from our other product categories, ride-on screeds, 3D profiler system, and some of our adjacent products like the Somero Line Dragon. So we feel good about the overall health of the market. And then with regard to the SkyScreed, we had flat performance period over period. We continue to see strong interest and a strong pipeline of prospective customers for the SkyScreed, but we did encounter some challenges in terms of getting on-site to do job site demos, which is a critical element to the selling process, as customers in the first half of 2021 opted to use traditional methods to catch up on some projects that were previously delayed, as opposed to entertaining the use of a disruptive new technology and evaluate that on their job sites. But once we see conditions normalize, we do expect to see an increased volume of job site demos, which should translate to improvement in sales. And then with regard to the other revenues, the major component in that is part sales, which is a good indication that our installed base of equipment has a high level of utilization, which again is comforting with regard to the health of the overall market. And with that, I will turn it over to Enzo to walk through the operating results.
Great. Thanks, John. So starting on slide 6, we have a summary of our operating results. As John detailed for us, we saw significant growth in our top line. And with that heightened volume and scale, we were able to generate better efficiencies in our manufacturing facility, which was the prime driver for the gross margin in the first half of approximately 59%, up from 54.7% in the same period last year. We also had price increases, which were modest and really geared towards offsetting higher input costs, as well as favorable product mix. As we look towards the second half of the year, we would expect gross margins would fluctuate to some extent in line with the top line results, but also will be reflective of a full period of expenses related to the new hires, which came on board toward the latter half of H1. Moving down a bit to total operating expenses, which increased approximately $2.7 million. Most of that increase was attributable to compensation expense, including sales commissions, but also reflective of the new hires that came on board. As John and Jack alluded to earlier, we hired approximately 30 people. Our effective tax rate remained consistent, all of which netted down to $18.3 million in net income, which is in excess of 200% growth over the same period last year. Moving on to our financial position, we ended the period with almost $33 million in cash. I'll speak more about that in the following slide. Accounts receivable and inventory increased proportionate to the increase in our trading, but as it relates to inventory, there was also an uplift as we introduced new products. There's a structural natural uplift in our inventory balance. Our total liabilities also increased proportionate to the increase in our operating expenses, the increase in inventory, as well as some timing of payments. But overall, we maintain a very healthy, lean balance sheet. Moving on to cash flows, with the very healthy net income of $18.3 million, which was slightly offset by some investment in working capital, which we expect and expect to continue in the second half as the expenses related to the additional new hires are borne. So overall, very positive cash generated from operating activities of $16 million. In terms of cash use and investing activities, that's reflective of our normal ongoing run rate of approximately $1 million to $1.5 million per year. In the second half, however, we would expect that to go up. With the launch of the expansion of our Houghton facility, we would expect our CapEx would be upwards of $4 million, which represents about 50% of the cost of that building or expansion, and the remaining balance likely to be completed by the end of the first half of next year. We also paid out over $17 million in dividends, and we continue the share buyback program, of which we have approximately $1 million to complete, and we expect to do so by the end of this year. All in all, this nets down to a modest decrease in cash of $2.6 million. As I mentioned, ending the period with almost $33 million and positioning us well moving into the second half of 2021. And with that, I'll hand it back to John.
Thanks, Enzo. So starting with a brief update on our strategy and the outlook for the remainder of 2021, it starts with our global growth opportunity. And the two main levers of growth for the business remain providing innovations, providing proprietary designs and solutions that will reduce manpower requirements for our customers, but also increase speed and safety and produce quality results. And taking those new innovations along with our existing product offering and gaining traction in our international markets by deepening our footprint with our international teams. And we had good progress in 2021 on both fronts. With regard to new products and product innovation, as Jack mentioned at the very beginning, we launched our SkyStrip solution, which is geared towards the high-rise structural market segment, which is a very important long-term growth segment opportunity for us. And also, products that we launched in the prior year in 2020 contributed meaningfully to the first half revenues and to growth. Those products on a combined basis resulted in $4.8 million in sales for the first half. And all of that activity in turn increased our patent portfolio to 91. With regard to the international opportunity, we continue to promote new products such as the SRS-4, which has international appeal, as well as we're in the process of exploring taking our SkyScreed from the US, which is currently exclusively where that product is being offered, and then taking it next to Europe and then ultimately to Australia. We see a good opportunity internationally for the SkyScreed. In support of all of that, in particular in Australia, we've added direct resources, as mentioned previously. We made the decision to go direct in Q4 of 2020, added those direct resources, and we saw good results as a result. So with regard to the recent new products, the bottom three, the Broom & Cure, the SRS-4, and the SkyScreed 36, were all products introduced in 2020, made good contributions to our first half results. The most recent product that launched in June 2021, it's not a laser screed, but it provides a solution for our customers in the process of stripping plywood sheets that are used in shoring structural high-rise buildings, which is a very dangerous activity. And this solution improves the safety, which is an important part of the value proposition, but also reduces manual labor requirements, as well as reducing the material damage to the plywood sheets, which is quite costly to our customers during the shoring process. And those new products in turn result in an overall increase to our products and the applications that we address, which is part of our strategy, which is to continue to increase our addressable market and enter into new applications and new markets to basically provide an increase in the opportunity long-term and the runway for future growth. The most recent segment that we added, obviously, was the high-rise structural market segment, which we're very excited about. And the solutions now we offer in that segment are the SkyScreed and the SkyStrip. But we also anticipate continuing to expand our offering for that market segment over the long term as we continue to spend more time on job sites, directly interacting with customers and identifying opportunities for solutions to help them improve their performance. And as Jack mentioned at the very beginning, we are in the process of completing the preparations for launch of a new product that we expect to be to market at the end of this year, early next year, which will add to this addressable market. It provides a solution for an application that we currently don't provide with our product offering. And we're very excited about the opportunity that represents. But the bigger picture is that we're in the process, through new product development, of continuing to increase our addressable market. And then with regard to international growth, as mentioned, the decision to go direct in Australia provided benefit in the first half, growing revenues to $2.7 million. But it does give us the opportunity to more comprehensively, fully, and in a focused manner, represent our entire product line, including new products, which we believe provides a good opportunity in that market going forward. And as we look at the other international markets starting in Europe, we continue to explore, as mentioned, the opportunity for the SkyScreed, but we're very much focused on getting additional increased penetration with new products in the European market, particularly the SRS-4, and growing our European customer base in submarkets of the region or in particular countries within the region where our value proposition is strongest. And our activity to support that effort is to continue to add resources, sales, and customer support to really capitalize on that opportunity. And that is a big part of our plans in the near term, is to continue to add direct resources so we can expand and increase our penetration of our global markets. And with regard to our ESG strategy and overall sustainability journey, really it starts with our goal, which is to strike the right balance between shareholder expectations as well as the needs and concerns of our stakeholders, which include our employees, customers, the community, and the environment, and to develop a comprehensive strategy that pulls it all together into a well-articulated strategy that addresses the regular engagement with stakeholders on the material topics. And we currently spend a lot of time at the board level with discussions on each of these material topics. And we made good progress in 2021 with regard to advancing and in further addressing these material topics with stakeholders. And to specifically address the 2021 progress, as mentioned in our earnings release, the board has made the commitment to add a fourth independent director to the board, which will provide an additional strategic voice in our board level discussions. Also adds to the independence of the board and provides an opportunity to add gender diversity to the board, which we believe is very important. And we're in the process of searching for that candidate. And while we haven't committed to a timeline, we are actively searching for the role and confident we'll find the right placement with the right profile and provide an update to the market as we progress. In addition, we have engaged with a third-party advisor to enhance and pull together our ESG reporting in a comprehensive and well-articulated way to address all of these material topics. And then with regard to the environment, we have continued to find and add energy efficient solutions, the most recent being providing energy efficient lighting for our operations facility in Houghton, Michigan, which reduces and improves our carbon footprint. And we're in the process of exploring a CO2 study to understand the impact of our equipment on the environment and the benefits our equipment provides by reducing the need and the waste of concrete in building projects, which will in turn reduce, we believe, the carbon requirements for constructing buildings. And then with regard to our 2021 outlook, it really does start with the health of an active U.S. non-residential construction market and the momentum that we've seen in the first half, which is carrying forward into the second half. We feel good about the breadth of the activity across multiple types of projects, and in particular, the strength of warehousing demand in the U.S., which certainly has provided us benefit. We're also pleased with the overall health of the European non-residential construction market and the confidence of the momentum in both of these markets, U.S. and Europe, really starts bottom up from feedback from our customers that continue to report healthy backlogs, project backlogs that extend well past 2021 into 2022. We're also encouraged by the early traction we've gained in Australia, the shift to go direct, and the opportunity from new products that direct sales and support team will help us capitalize on. And then with regard to China, we recognize that there will continue to be near-term factors that impact our near to medium-term performance in China. The longer-term breakthrough performance in China, again, remains to hinge on the demand for quality from domestic building owners and end users in China. And then with regard to our other markets, we do expect to see opportunities for growth and also from new products, which is a key element to our international growth. But given the relative small base of revenue from those markets, we do expect to see a degree of volatility in performance. And then lastly, as Jack mentioned in the very beginning of the presentation, the strong performance in the first half, along with the positive momentum carrying into the second half and the overall health of the non-residential construction markets that we continue to see, we have raised guidance to $120 million in revenues, up from previously $110 million, the EBITDA $42 million for the full year 2021, up from the previous $35 million, which also recognizes some improved margins and the operational leverage that we've experienced. And then lastly, with the strong operating cash flow that we expect to continue to see, but also reflective of the increased interim dividend and anticipated spend in 2021 on the planned facility expansion, which could approximate up to $4 million this year towards the total project, we expect year-end net cash will approximate $36 million. And with that, we would like to open up questions.
And we have a question here. Please, can you describe the split in your revenue and profit between repeat customers and new customers, and also give an indication towards the expected lifespan of a Somero product?
So starting with the split between existing and new customers, there are a couple of dimensions on that. So sales to existing customers often include sales of new products to existing customers. So there's certainly an element of continued growth from those existing customer relationships. But historically, we've generally seen new customers, sales to new customers versus existing to be roughly 20%, 80%. And it does vary from period to period, but we continue to add new customer relationships, which is important for the long-term growth of the business. And then with regard to the useful life of our equipment, it does vary across the product line. We've often referred to the expected useful life of our large equipment, our boom screeds, to be comparable to an automobile, dependent upon hours of use of our equipment, which is comparable to mileage on an auto. But we see useful lives that can range from, you know, 7 to 10 years. But oftentimes customers decide to trade their equipment in earlier based on capturing and because of new technology that we're offering with our newer version of a piece of equipment. And then as you move down the product line to the ride-on screeds, the useful life will be slightly less, as those pieces of equipment generally have slightly higher utilization, and the transport of that smaller piece of equipment oftentimes yields to a little bit more wear and tear.
Thank you. And are your clients being affected by labor shortages constraining their ability to deploy new equipment?
Labor shortages in the construction industry has been a perpetual pain point going back many years. Is a lack of skilled labor in particular, as there's been very few, or there's been a limited amount of new talent that has come into the construction industry. That in particular plays very well to our value proposition, because our equipment and our solutions reduce the need for manpower for our customers, which plays, you know, very, very well into addressing that particular pain point. With regard to any limitations of the lack of skilled labor on adoption of our new products, there really isn't a direct correlation there. Basically what we see is customers are more in need of our equipment because of that particular pain point.
Thank you. And is your manufacturing being affected by the chip shortages?
Our equipment is not relying on chips. Chips would be more relevant to the auto industry and presumably other industries. The chip shortage has not had a direct impact on our business.
Thank you. And could you summarize your progressive dividend policy?
Sure. So our policy remains consistent, as we previously announced, 50% of adjusted net income as ordinary income, ordinary dividend, and cash, 50% of excess cash over $20 million is distributed in the form of a supplemental dividend. We monitor our cash balance on an ongoing basis and look for ways to reinvest that cash in the business or externally to get longer term returns. However, we continue to utilize the supplemental dividend as a mechanism to release some of excess cash sitting idle on the balance sheet and returning dividends back to shareholders. We do not foresee any changes in that policy in the near term, but we do continue to monitor and evaluate on an ongoing basis.
And Storm Ida and other adverse weather have been disruptive forces so far in half two. Have you seen much impact from project delays to date?
We have not seen direct impacts from some of the storms that have been clearly very evident in the U.S. And that's really a benefit of having a very fragmented customer base and having activity broadly across the U.S. So we generally aren't exposed to particular areas of the country where there may be some very, very adverse impacts from weather.
And given inflationary pressures in the system, how have discussions with clients gone around product price increases?
So with regard to just general inflation, as it impacts the construction industry, we're clearly not alone in that. Many of the input costs for our customers have increased, notably this year. Many of the suppliers to our customers, to contractors, many of those suppliers have actually put in place price increases mid-year to counteract the impacts of input cost increases such as steel and lumber, et cetera. We're really much, very much in line with other suppliers in terms of price increases.
Thank you. Could you comment on client backlogs and how much confidence there is amongst customers at present? Has there been any change in trend given inflation and raw material shortages?
No, the confidence, the health of our customers in terms of their project backlogs remains very much intact. We've not seen any change in the trajectory of that. With regard to potential supply chain shortages that our customers may experience, and or inflation, it really hasn't impacted the projects other than potentially slowing some of those projects as there are some certain constraints on getting materials to do the work. But from an overall perspective, it's not had an impact on the sentiment towards the positive activity and the healthy backlogs.
And regarding senior board members, are there any retirement plans or succession plans you could share with us?
We have already had a succession plan from the day we went public, and we review it constantly with the board. And when we get to that point where there's something that we need to announce, we will. But at the moment, we don't have anything to say.
And do you feel that overseas markets, especially Europe, are lagging the COVID recovery seen in the US and hence are likely to see stronger growth?
So we have seen somewhat of a lag in terms of the international markets compared to the US. The US was subject to a lesser degree of restrictions through the period. However, we're really encouraged by the activity we're seeing in our international markets, and particularly from new products. So we expect to see good performance and good contributions to growth from our international markets. And in particular, our intention is to make continued investments to add to our sales coverage and customer support teams to really capitalize on that opportunity.
Thank you. And you've consistently stated that meaningful sales in China hinges on educating potential commercial site owners of the benefit of a laser screed floor. Is this something that you feel you can meaningfully impact? And would it be better worth your time simply to wait on the sidelines for the Chinese market to mature? This would allow you to focus management time on more promising markets such as India and Australia.
So we do recognize there are limitations to our ability to impact more widespread demand for quality flat level floors and also the benefits of wide placement in the overall China market. We've done very well to reach out and to educate stakeholders in that, but we do recognize it's a long-term journey for quality to take hold in China. And certainly our intention is to focus our resources on where we see near to medium term opportunity. And we will continue to do that while we also continue to evaluate the markets where quality has yet to take hold.
And it's great to hear that a fourth NED is to be appointed and that you're seeking greater diversity with this. What skill set are you looking for in this appointment?
So with regard to the added board member, we have a very, very good board that's active, that provides a wide range of insight into our business, and is also very familiar with our industry. By looking for the new board member, we're very focused on adding a complementary strategic voice. Really, we've generated a number of profiles. In each case, it's complementing, it's adding to or enhancing the strategic inputs. We're not committed to any particular background, but we can say that it's meant to be very forward-looking, and it's meant to be really a complementary added insight that maybe is not as prevalent on our existing board.
And following on from the rising labour costs and shortages of labour question, can you give us some indication what the payback figures look like for a contractor buying a Somerose Greed versus having a team? For example, any hard figures to put Somerose value proposition?
Well, generally, when we look at the value proposition for equipment, the payback is going to range in that kind of 2 to 3 year period of time. It will vary based on you. Really, the big variable there is utilization of the equipment. How often is that piece of equipment used? Our contractors really view the equipment in a couple of ways. And while the long-term payback is certainly evaluated, the short-term is a key focus of theirs to make sure that as many of the larger pieces of equipment are financed, that the utilization really supports the required monthly payments to finance the laser screed or the boom screed. So it's looked at it in a couple of ways, but generally 2 to 3 years overall payback, which certainly as labor costs rise and utilization is strong, that payback ends up being on the lower end. And I should mention, in terms of just the productivity, the skilled labor training or shortage in the industry, one of our key elements or our competitive advantages is to provide training, a venue for training, which we have here in Fort Myers, to really provide a comprehensive solution for our customers, not just providing them a piece of equipment, but also providing them the ability to train and add skilled labor to their own teams.
Thank you. And in order to penetrate smaller territories globally, would you consider setting up a service company that uses your products?
So we are a direct sales organization from day one, selling directly to end users. We do not get into providing service or providing a rental opportunity for customers where we would provide a rental piece of equipment with an operator, as that would really lead us to directly competing often with our customers. So we're very mindful of that. And in terms of selling through rental companies or hire companies, we've explored that avenue multiple times in the past. There has not been a significant amount of interest from the rental companies for our laser screed equipment for a variety of factors, which also includes the challenges with maintaining the fleet, cleaning, sort of maintenance challenges. So really, we're very comfortable with the go direct effort and selling to end users at this point.
And what percentage market penetration has hitherto been achieved in the US? And what type of or size of companies are not investing in automation?
So to address the second part of the question, there really is no size of business that precludes customers from investing in new technology. If a customer has adequate work to support the investment, they will absolutely invest in our equipment. Really, our equipment is really a requirement to compete effectively in the non-residential construction market for contractors. So that is really the business oftentimes is built around the laser screed and or some of the adjacent equipment we offer. So if you kind of take a step back with regard to penetration in the U.S., really the best way to view that is to look across the product portfolio. Our large equipment, our boom screed category, has a very high level of penetration. Customers really will not be able to cost effectively complete a large placement, a warehouse, without using a laser screed. So you have a very high level of penetration in the large equipment. As you move down the list to the smaller equipment, such as the ride-on screeds, and certainly some of the adjacent products, there's a much less level of penetration, and that provides an opportunity for us to get that growth in a mature market like the U.S. is really getting more traction with those new products, adjacent products, and smaller pieces of equipment.
Thank you. The rest of the world's sales have been poor for many years, with very little effort being made to penetrate these markets. Does the fledgling success in Australia now provide an impetus to address the rest of the world markets more aggressively?
So we have invested significantly in our international markets to capture growth. About 25 to 30% of our resources, non-operational, are based in the international markets. We've had good success in educating, particularly in the developing markets, to educate stakeholders on the importance of quality. And, you know, many of those markets were created by us as by our entry into them. As far as disproportionate results, obviously the U.S. has had great success, particularly in the first half of this year, which creates a level of imbalance between the two, international versus the U.S. But at the same time, you know, we recognize the pace of growth and the opportunity internationally remains significant. But we also recognize we need to be very focused on that growth. And certainly we are and intend to be, and adding resources in a very targeted fashion on those markets where we see the best near to medium term opportunity, and have that be our focus, while also continuing to promote and develop some of the longer term growth opportunities in emerging markets.
And a couple of questions on share buybacks. The company haven't been able to buy back many shares to offset dilution in half one. Under what conditions will the buyback continue or be accelerated?
So we do expect the approved buyback, the remaining million authorization, to be completed by the end of the year. The first half buybacks were not really a function of decisions to not purchase shares. We had some administrative issues that we needed to work through. And as a result, we do expect the pace of buybacks to pick up in the second half and for us to complete that authorization. But basically the bigger story with the buybacks is it's not meant to be a primary means of distributing capital back to shareholders. It's purely oriented towards managing the dilution of our equity award programs.
Selling, marketing, and customer support expenditure as a percentage of revenue was somewhat lower versus historical norms, 9% versus 10 to 12%. There seem to be quite a few moving parts, such as the increased direct sales in Australia, higher headcount coming through in half two, and the growth of the business. What should we forecast here going forward? A return to historical norms, or for this percentage to remain lower for the foreseeable future?
No, we expect to see increases in sales, customer support, product development, and engineering. We actually are in the process of and have recruitments underway to add a number of resources globally, including in Europe. And we do expect to see additions there. Really, the first half performance was particularly unique as the company really to sort of address and manage the rapid increase in demand. The company added 30 staff, but that was really in the first half. We ran very lean. So many of those hires and additions happened in the kind of mid to latter part of the first half. So we kind of expect the organization to catch up a little bit in terms of resources. And we have very specific plans, many of which are underway, to add resources in the sales and support area across the globe.
Thank you. And I know you've answered about dividend policy, but there's still a question which I'll ask because there's more clarity required. Is the policy on calculating the dividend still in place for 2021 and beyond?
Yes, it is. Yeah. So the policy that we most recently announced, which changed from the previous policy with regards to the supplemental dividend, really, whereby previously we were distributing 50% of excess cash over 15 million, we bumped that up to 20 million. And so for the upcoming year, we will remain consistent with the latest policy. And just to reiterate, it's 50% of adjusted net income in the form of an ordinary dividend, and 50% of excess cash over 20 million as a supplemental dividend. And again, that's just a clearing mechanism to ensure we don't have excess idle cash sitting on the balance sheet.
Thank you. And who is your main competitor and what's your competitive advantage?
So our competitive landscape really hasn't changed in recent years. There is always a level of competition in the market. Generally, the competitors that we've seen historically that remain in place are smaller businesses, more entrepreneurial oriented competitors that sell laser screed or, you know, similar type of equipment. Generally, you know, we obviously have the vast majority, very, very dominant, almost exclusive market share control across our markets, particularly in the more mature markets. But our competitive advantage remains the training support, the entire solution, the entire relationship that we provide with our customers beyond just selling a piece of equipment, which is really how our competitors go to market. We sell the equipment, but we sell more of a solution that includes the training for the operators and helping our customers develop skilled labor, as well as the support that's critical, particularly in these high stress job site environments. And by support, it's not just parts, but it's also service and the expertise that we can provide customers to help them troubleshoot, but also help them address other challenges they may experience on the job site. So that's really the main competitive advantage that we have that protects our business. And obviously, our patent portfolio is key and important as well. But those two pieces really end up being the primary means of protecting ourselves.
And the new guidance for $120 million for full year 21 implies a big reversal of historic patterns of the significant half two weighting. Is this prudence or is there some structural change?
So there's no structural change. If you go back, the past couple of years have had kind of second half weighted years, but we had in both cases experienced sort of extraordinary issues in the first half. Back in 2019, it was significant rainfall in the U.S. And then second half in 2019, work caught up. In 2020, obviously COVID in the first half of the year with the restrictions in place impacted performance. And then the second half started to pick up as those restrictions were lessened. So if you go back historically, it's closer to a 50-50 split. This particular year in 2021, we do recognize there was an element of catch-up work that took place in the first half. We're not able to quantify that, but we know jobs that were previously slowed based on COVID restrictions, were kind of back on track and certainly in full effect. And our customers worked very hard to reduce some of their backlog, which was quite extensive. And we're not clear on how much the first step was catch-up work. But what we can say is, our guidance for the year is, I think, very prudent and recognizes there's a number of risk factors, but we believe it's very prudent guidance and we don't see any structural change to the marketplace.
Thank you. And in the first half, gross margin percentage achieved was nearly 59%, which was substantially higher than typical. Was that a complete outlier or a sign of some more structural change?
Yeah, so the very strong gross margin in the first half was primarily driven by the heightened volume and trading, which yielded better efficiencies in our manufacturing, which we were able to gain, scale. That was the primary driver. We did put through some modest price increases to offset input costs. So we were able to really recoup a lot of the higher input costs from raw materials. And we also had favorable product mix. Although we have consistent margins across our product portfolio, our reman machines do deliver a lower margin. Those are the trade-ins that we receive, remanufacture, and sell. So we had fewer sales of remands in the first half of the year, so that we had some favorable mix there as well. But generally, it was the volume and running very lean, as John mentioned, during the first half. And so revenue sort of outpaced the organization. Those costs will catch up to some extent in the second half. But in general, we expect, 57% gross margins to be our normal.
Thank you. And can you say anything about your organic sales growth in the midterm going forward?
So we, in normal conditions, over the long term, we expect mid-single digit growth with new product revenue growth to be layered on top. And that's sort of the long-term trajectory of the business. Obviously, that ignores any business cycles that may occur. And that's our goal. That's our target. And we feel comfortable with that view of our business going forward.
And to what extent are the good results a result of your ability to service clients more promptly than your competitors over recent months? And if this was a factor, when do you think this tailwind will abate?
Yes. I mean, I think as Jack mentioned at the very beginning of the call, we did not miss any deliveries for customer orders in 2021, and we're really proud of that accomplishment. Many other equipment OEMs were not able to deliver and have very delayed delivery dates. So we've managed the supply chain challenges and been able to deliver. We do not anticipate, we do expect to continue to see some supply chain challenges. Obviously, daily we deal with those, but we see and we continue to believe that we'll be able to meet our customer expectations in terms of equipment delivery. We're very comfortable with the guidance we've put out there. It's very, as we mentioned, a prudent view of the second half of the year. And we're comfortable with our expectations.
And I'm not sure whether you can answer this question. You're planning to increase your capacity. When do you expect to be at a level of $175 million?
That's not something we're able to really forecast. We have decided to accelerate our plans to expand our facility to accommodate that next phase of growth. And we're comfortable, with the expansion, which we expect to be completed sometime mid next year, that will prepare us for that next phase of growth. We don't know how quickly we will get there, but certainly the trajectory of the business is such that we're driving towards that number.
Tremendous. Thank you very much. And that's the end of questions. Jack, do you have any closing remarks?
Well, I would just like to thank everybody for taking time to come to the presentation, and those were a lot of really, really good questions. And we're very excited about having a very strong second half, and we look forward to talking to you again when we have some more worthwhile information to pass along. Thank you very much and have a great day.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.